Fancy a game?
Tyler Bischoff is...
And are they both trying not to laugh at the word duty?
Yeah.
Technically correct.
Why is she speaking like...
Because they learned English from Professor Magoo over there.
Relax, we'll be in and out. Anyway, you've never seen my lab.
Oh, great. I get to see your nerd lab.
Hands up!
Hello, Unreasonable Expectations. The Raiders are winning the offseason. People are going to expect John Gruden to be good in year two, and they're going to go 6-10, and it's going to be hilarious. It's going to be so great.
They might go 6-10 with, like, a point, like, average of, like, 40.
Yeah.
They might score 40 points a game and lose 10 games.
We'll get to more Raiders. Ray Brewer is going to join us. We'll talk UNLV basketball, football, maybe a little bit of Lights FC. He wrote about Eric Winalda. But we're going to start with UNLV basketball, and we're going to start with sort of the big picture of the regular season. And the question that's sort of been asked all season, we've talked a lot about it, and the word that gets brought up is progress. And so did UNLV show progress this year? Was their 11-7 Mountain West record progress this year? On the positive side, they finished fifth. They won 11 games. It's the most games they've won in Mountain West play since 2011. Both of those are good things, even though if you tweet out those two facts, people will yell at you that they're not good things. But those are good things. But on the flip side of that, this is the lowest the Mountain West has ever been rated. Not only that, UNLV had the second easiest schedule in this Mountain West. Utah State's schedule was rated as easier than UNLV's, but UNLV avoided playing Utah State and Fresno State twice. So the second and third best teams in this conference, UNLV didn't have to play them two times. So the context is very important on how you judge this Mountain West season, because 11-7 is a good record. Finishing fifth is a good thing for a program that hasn't done that in, 5 years. But it's also the weakest the Mountain West has ever been. And if you do this, so I think the best way to do this is by resume. Like, pretend you are a selection committee and you're trying to impress them. Selection committee doesn't tend to care about what your overall record is or what place you finished in a conference. They want to see good wins, avoiding bad losses, that type of stuff. So you look at, you know, what would you present to a committee to say, this is what we did that was impressive. The Mountain West had three teams in the top 100 in KenPom. UNLV went 0-4 in those games, and they lost all four by at least 16 points. Completely uncompetitive against those teams. There was one other team in the top 150. That was San Diego State. They lost both of those. One was by 17, and one was by 1 point. So a blowout loss and a coin flip loss. But against teams outside the top 150, they were 11-1. They took care of business, which is a good thing. Again, that is a positive thing to take care of business. 11-1 against teams outside the top 150 is pretty solid. It is a baseline positive thing, right? Like, that's sort of the expectation that you would have for a UNLV program, for what you'd expect to be a good program, is okay. You beat the bad teams 11 out of 12 times. Okay, that works. So, if you're doing this on a resume basis, it's not all that impressive. Like, the consistency against the bad teams is good, but it's, you wouldn't look at this and say, oh yeah, this team, they've got something special going for them. The important way to look at it now that this regular season is over is, what does it mean for next year, right? Do we have any sort of, should we have expectations that this team takes that next step to where, instead of just simply beating all of the bad teams in the conference, now they start to beat some of the good teams in the conference? Next year, can they go, 11-1 against all the bad teams and then win two or three games against some of the good teams? I don't know that we have the evidence to say they can, because they didn't this year. And it's going to be basically the same roster. You're replacing Clyburn and Robotham with Houston and two freshmen. So I don't know that we've seen that, because I would say this, it would almost have been better. Like, if you're trying to project for the future, it would almost be better if UNLV had lost a game to Wyoming, who's terrible, lost a game to New Mexico, who's bad, and replaced those with a win over San Diego State and, like, a win over Fresno State. Because at least then, you would look at it and say, well, we've seen them beat good teams in the conference. They just weren't consistent enough all year. And this whole idea of getting old and staying old is about consistency, right? Like, Amori Hardy and Joel Tomboy have flashes of being great, but the whole idea of them getting old and staying old is about being consistent. This UNLV team was consistent this year. They beat up the bad teams and lost to the good teams. Normally got blown out by the good teams. So I think if their 11-7 record had it had one bad loss in that Air Force one. If they had like three bad losses but had two more, you know, good wins, I think I'd be more encouraged that next year they would take that step. But we haven't seen them beat one of the good teams, and we haven't even seen them really compete with one of the good teams. So is there reason to think that next year they're going to be able to do that? I don't know. I mean, a lot of these teams lose stuff, so there'll be different rosters next year. Utah State doesn't lose like anything. That team's going to be awesome next year again. But
with their 26-year-old freshman.
That's right. It's going to be awesome. So
he's a 27-year-old sophomore.
Provo. So I look at this year as I don't believe this Mountain West season, I don't think it was a negative or a positive. Like, I think it's the most neutral, average season you could possibly have. And that's what they did. Like, I don't think you can look at this year and say Marvin Menzies is terrible, Marvin Menzies is great. I don't think you can look at it and say this roster is terrible or this roster is great. I think it's just everything was average this year. Because that's what it is. Every team that finished ahead of them, they lost to. Every team that finished below them, they beat, except for the one 18-point loss to Air Force. So it's an average year. Is that a hot take?
It's
not, but it is, because everybody is on one side or the other.
Yeah. So it's a hot take to some. It's a tepid take to others.
I think there is one fair question.
Be nicer to UNLV.
There is one fair.
Why are you so nice to UNLV?
Asterisk to throw on this, and that's Shakur Justin, who, if we go back to the preseason, was, you know, one of the top 10 players in the Mountain West. He didn't get voted the first team All Mountain West, but he would have been like sixth or seventh had they gone out that far. You know, he had a shot to be a first team All Mountain West.
Had they done it like the women's team.
Yeah, exactly. But he didn't play in a Mountain West game because he got hurt 8 games into the season. And I think it's fair to ask, you know, would this team have been better had Shakur Justin been healthy the whole year? And I don't think their record would have been, though, because if you look at the games they lost, of those 7, only one was by single digits. So, okay, maybe he switches the game against San Diego State where they lose by 1 here, but, like, he's not a 17-point difference against Utah State or Nevada. Like, they aren't winning those games because Shakur Justin's there. So I don't know that their record changes a whole lot. And actually, if you look at, like, when was UNLV at their best this year, it's when they first went to Tomboy at power forward and played small ball. And if Justin's in there, you're not really playing small ball. You're playing, you know, big, trying to bully everybody. So I think when this team was at their best was the opposite of what Shakur Justin brings you. So losing Shakur Justin is losing a good player, but I don't think it really hurt them in Mountain West play. Like, I don't think their record's any different if Shakur Justin is healthy this whole year. Doesn't mean he's not a good player. I just think the net gain and loss isn't enough to have swung anything, largely because they pretty much lost every single game by 18 points, and they won, like, all the games they won pretty much, except for the Colorado State ones. Was like by 18 points too. Like, every game was a blowout. So I don't know that Shakur Justin would have had that much of an impact. So, average season, Shakur Justin comes back next year. You hope it's a little bit better than average because experience. You want to get outraged at the All Mountain West teams now?
I mean, no, but
outrage, Jared. That's the whole point of conference awards. You know who is mad? Fresno State's head coach, Justin Hudson. He tweeted, "Get rid of our media poll, please." He's nice about it, though, so maybe he's not that angry.
Please.
Please. we don't know what Justin Hudson's upset about, but just to know what Fresno State got in these awards, they had no one voted to the first team, but they had two guys voted to the media's second team, and one guy voted to the media's third team. They finished third in the Mountain West, and ultimately it comes down to the media saying, hey, you had the 6th, 7th, and 12th best players in the conference. And one of those guys was voted newcomer of the year. Maybe he wanted to be coach of the year. I don't know. He got one vote for that. Craig Smith got the rest of them. But I just love the idea of a coach finishing third and being angry that none of his guys made it on the first team All Mountain West team. Kind of hilarious.
Also, he's playing in the conference that has Utah. I mean, like, what did you came in third And it was a wide margin between third and second.
Right. I don't know what he expected. Like, it's not like Fresno State was challenging for the title in the last 4 weeks of the season.
No, it was. This was a one-horse race that somehow became a two-horse race that the rest of the horses were either put down or finished somewhere between a minute or so later.
Like, yeah, I don't know why Justin Hudson would be so upset to want to get rid of the media poll. On the UNLV side, two players were named to the third team. The coaches, by the way, have their own that's coming out. Probably tomorrow, I think, is the date for that. Clyburn and Robotham were both named to the third team. No other Rebel got a vote to make it on any of the teams. None of the Rebels got any of the awards, like Player of the Year, Freshman of the Year, anything like that. Clyburn and Robotham, if you look at the UNLV team, they probably deserved it. UNLV had a big four. Tom Wehardy, Clyburn, Robotham. They played the most minutes in Mountain West play. Those were the four leading scorers. They all were between 10 and 15 points per game. Like, none of them were particularly that much better than the other ones, but I think if you were to pick two out of them, Clyburn and Robotham would be the two. One, they're not useless on defense, and two, Clyburn was efficient all year offensively, consistent all year, and Robotham had a ton of big assist games where it was like, oh yeah, that guy made the difference. Hardy and Tomboy, yeah, Tomboy did go for, what was it, 31 against Wyoming and pretty much won that game by himself, but for the most part, I think Clyburn and Robotham were probably ahead of that. The concern, though, is if you look at the media's team, because they did not only their top three teams, but they also unveiled like every other player that got a vote. So like he didn't make the third team, but hey, that guy got two votes to be on the third team or whatever. They had 23 total players, and UNLV only had two of those 23, and they're both seniors. And if you look at those 23, 13 of those 23 are not seniors. There'll be transfers and guys, you know, Jalen McDaniels might go pro, so some more might leave, but not all of the talent in the Mountain West is running away. And so this idea that, you know, UNLV is going to be more experienced next year and, you know, Hardy and Tomboy are going to be better, so is the rest of the conference. Like, that idea of getting older and more experienced works for everybody. So, like, if 13 of the 23 best players in the Mountain West return next year and UNLV doesn't have one of them...
Oh, no, it works for everybody.
Right. Like, so, I think it's, like, should Hardy and Tomboy get better next year? Sure. Will they get better than everybody else in the conference? Probably not. Like, I love Hardy and Tomboy. I think they're both good pieces, but they're not, Hardy and Tomboy is not going to be a good enough sort of 1-2 to lead you to the Mountain West title. Now, Hamilton, how big of a step does he take? How important is Houston next year? Like, all that matters, but I just don't know that next year's roster is going to be good enough to make any sort of significant leaps. They might finish third or fourth. They might finish better, but it's not going to be, oh, yeah, that team's playing for the NCAA tournament now. I just don't have that expectation for next year's team unless there's some significant change to the roster. Technically Correct, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Make sure you have the Be Connected Sports app downloaded. It is the easy-to-use app that lets you bet in-game and while you watch. That doesn't make any sense. It lets you bet before and in-game while you watch. It's the Be Connected Sports app from Boyd Gaming.
Get in touch with the show on Twitter at @Bischoff_Tyler.
Hey, it's Tyler Bischoff. Want the easiest way to bet on sports in Las Vegas? Download the Be Connected Sports app for free from the Apple or Google Play stores. Then head to your favorite Boyd location like the Orleans, Gold Coast, or Sun Coast to create an account. And with just a $100 deposit, you'll get a free $50 to wager. Then you'll be able to bet before or during the games you love to watch. Plus, if you use Pay Near Me, depositing money into your account can be done at 7-Elevens, Family Dollar Stores, or CVS Pharmacy. It's the Be Connected Sports app from Boyd Gaming.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
The Raiders signed safety LaMarcus Joyner.
ESPN reported the deal is 4 years and around $42 million. Free safety, potentially plays slot corner as well. He played both with the Rams, where he spent the first 5 years of his career. He's 29, or will be 29, next season, so not particularly young or old, but if you remember last year, it seemed like every single player that John Gruden signed was 34 years old.
Get old, stay old.
It worked. Probably shouldn't use Pro Football Focus as the Bible, but they rank all the players. They make it easy to say, is this guy any good? If you compare LaMarcus Joyner to the safeties for the Raiders last year, Reggie Nelson was the 66th best safety. Marcus Gilchrist was the 85th best safety. Joyner was the 28th best. So it's going to be an upgrade. Is it a good or smart use of the cap space they have? I'm not really sure. Were there better safeties out there? Yes.
For sure.
But it is the first step they've made in free agency on the defensive side of the ball, where they've gone out and added to what was probably the worst defense in football last year. They gave up the most points in football, so if you use that, they were the worst in football. According to The Athletic, they have $32 million left in cap space, and they're looking to still sign a pass rusher in free agency. So that would potentially be their next move, or Le'Veon Bell.
I'm trying to think. Oh, according to Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell's already signed a deal, and good for him.
Antonio Brown said that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. With the Raiders or just with the team?
No, Antonio Brown just on Twitter went, good on Le'Veon Bell getting his money. I'll let him tell you which team. And it's like, thanks, buddy.
Nailed it.
This was good news. Every day, somebody calls in and doesn't realize we don't take calls. The Lady Rebels lost to Fresno State 66-55.
The only show in the country that bounces from Raiders free agency to UNLV Lady Rebels. Quarterfinal loss in the Mountain West tournament, so their season ends at 12-18. Pretty big disappointment for this year's team. They were picked to finish second in the Mountain West. This was the season Kathy Olivier was kind of building towards over the last few years. Like, they had six seniors this year, a bunch of returners. They got old. But they had some injuries. They went 2-9 in non-conference play. They did win 10 Mountain West games, so it wasn't a terrible Mountain West season. But again, heading into the year, they were picked to finish second, so the expectation was probably to win, you know, 13 or 14 Mountain West games and compete with Boise State for the title. But they didn't do that, and they end up losing in the first round, or their first game of the Mountain West tournament.
Sorry, I was trying to find the sound of Kathy Olivier saying, I don't want to go to the NIT.
I don't think she has to worry about that this year.
At least she got us Nick Blair. The Golden Knights have introduced Spanish Twitter and Instagram pages.
I am conflicted because they're trying to creep on our territory where we steal from ESPN Deportes here and play you Spanish goal calls. We steal it. We stole it first. Now they're just trying to steal it after us because they're like, oh, that's a good idea. People want to hear it. So I kind of don't want to talk about it, but we have something wonderful from it. Bill Foley speaking in Spanish.
Hola, soy los fans de los Golden Knights. Me llamo Guillermo Foley y soy el presidente de los Golden Knights. Estamos muy emocionados de lanzar nuestros nuevos canales de redes sociales en español. Para que nos sigan en Instagram, en los Golden Knights, y en Twitter, a los VGK. Para que no te pierdas nada de los Golden Knights en tu idioma, síguenos. Go Knights, go.
Does Bill Foley speak Spanish?
Yeah, that's kind of the question I was left with, but forever this will be now a part of our show.
Me llamo Guillermo.
I do enjoy that he went with Guillermo instead of Bill.
Well, I mean,
he was committed.
Yeah,
he's committed to it. Like, it's like when you're in middle school Spanish.
Yep.
And the teacher makes you pick a Spanish name. Like, I guess I am
fairly certain there is no Spanish name for Jared, because in middle school Spanish, I'd always wind up with like a weird like deviation of Jeremy.
Yeah, so I don't think there's one for Tyler, because I always went by my middle name, which in Spanish is Federico.
Yeah, I think I was Herateo at one point.
So if you would like to call me Federico from now on, I am totally on board with that. We have some breaking news, though.
What?
Vic Tafer. I don't know. I just ruined his last name. Oh, my God.
You just Jared-ed that whole terrible thing.
Vic Tafer of The Athletic. Le'Veon Bell just followed Derek Carr on Twitter.
Uh-oh!
Me llamo Guillermo.
UNLV has a 3.1% chance to win the Mountain West tournament.
That is according to KenPom, fourth highest odds. Nevada's at 50%, Utah State's at 30%, Fresno State's at 12%. They are slightly ahead of San Diego State, who's at 2.6%. I think UNLV would have been better off getting the sixth seed. then the 5 seed.
Hey, 4th place.
That's right. Tied for 4th. Because, like, okay, yeah, you got to play your first round game, but come on, you're not losing that one. And then you don't have to play Nevada in the semifinal. Like, yes, you still have to beat Fresno State, which is harder to do than beating San Diego State. I understand that. But I think, like, the goal here is to win the Mountain West Tournament Championship. Like, there is no other, like, you're not avoid a bad loss or get so far and you're in the NCAA tournament. No, they need to win the whole thing. And I think the path would be easier, even if they had to play the extra game, to not go through Nevada until the final and hope somebody else beats them.
How, I mean, it'd be great for this show if UNLV just sort of like got to the championship game, like beat Nevada, beat San Diego. But it would also like be, to me, the most Mountain West thing that could possibly happen besides San Jose State running the table and just winning the whole thing.
Who would be the most Mountain West team to win the tournament? Because it's not San Jose State, because they're just bad. Like, them losing...
It's probably New Mexico, yeah, to like, be honest.
San Jose State losing by 100 is the most Mountain West thing to happen, because that team is terrible. Yeah, New Mexico's a pretty good one, right? Because they've been pretty dreadful all season, but they've got a big fan base. And
they beat Nevada randomly. Yeah,
that might be the one. Maybe Boise State.
I feel like they're kind of like, maybe they're bad. I don't know.
I have a weird perception that Boise State's always good in the Mountain West Tournament, and it might be completely wrong. I just have this. I'm like, yeah, they're good. They always win in the Mountain West Tournament. I don't even think they do. I don't think there's any facts to back that up. It might just be the women. The Boise State women are always good in the Mountain West Tournament. Maybe that's what I'm doing there.
Me llamo Guillermo.
UNLV is 2-8 against San Diego State in the Mountain West Tournament.
Yeah, here's some facts for you. Their last win over San Diego State was in the Mountain West Tournament was 2003. In all seriousness, San Diego State has owned UNLV in the Mountain West Tournament, like to the point where it's just ridiculous. Like, they're 2-8. They've played them 10 times in this tournament.
Well,
they've
it's
lost
basically,
eight
it,
of them.
I mean, it's like a home game for San Diego
right?
State.
None of that actually matters for this year's matchup. Like, historical meetings don't mean anything, but I do just find it amusing that San Diego State just literally always beat. Like, they always eliminate UNLV in the Mountain West Tournament. 8 times they've eliminated from the Mountain West Tournament just in their season.
Crazy. Lights FC unveiled their Golden Knight themed jerseys. Thanks, Tyler, for getting me one.
Nope, you're not getting one. They look pretty sweet. They are gray and black. They've got the little gold and red stripes on the sides, or on the sleeves, I should say. They're wearing them March 30th. That's their next home game. They're wearing them March 30th. You can buy them from the team, or I guess reserve them from the team, because you'll pick them up at the game. Their deal is $99, get you the jersey and an upper midfield seat. I think upper midfield seats cost $30 usually. So essentially a $60 jersey and a $30 ticket, or a $69 jersey and a $30 ticket is what you're looking at there. Or if you have season tickets, you can reserve them for $50. People are going to eat these up, right? Like, anything with Golden Knights related to it is going to just get devoured by this town.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say the vanity license plate capital of the world. And people were like, wait, there are new Golden Knight vanity plates I could buy? Let's buy them all. And they sold out of license plates.
Is there actual research on that? Like, not the Golden Knight themed ones, but just people getting personalized plates that say whatever they want them to say on the back. Las Vegas has to be the top, right?
It's the most I've ever seen, but I've lived all over the country. But yeah, it's weird.
Like, I feel like I see more of those than I do people who don't have a personalized license plate in the city.
Yeah, it's really weird.
What is wrong with this city?
We like to dispose of our income.
Is that what it is?
We
want to spend it at the DMV?
Got a better ROI.
Me llamo Guillermo.
UNLV football returns its entire coaching staff for 2019.
You know what they're doing. Getting old and staying old with the coaching staff. Story from Mark Anderson and the RJ. Do you think it matters? Like, do you care that the whole coaching staff is back?
I mean, I would have... not really. I mean, I would have liked some movement at the offensive coordinator position, but that's...
They're good on offense.
Yeah, they're boring on offense.
I mean, it's not perfection, but they're good. The offensive stuff is good. Like, if you're looking at this team and complaining about something, it's not the offense.
I know. It's just not the style of football I enjoy.
That doesn't matter. We're not here for Jared's enjoyment.
I'm aware of that.
To me, it only matters like if the coaching staff is good, that the coaching staff all returns. Like if it's kind of like the argument that's been with UNLV football the last couple of years, where like they'll return 7 or 8 starters on defense, and it's like, yeah, but they were the 118th best defense in the country last year. Like that's
but
not
they're
a
all
good,
back.
Like it's not a good thing. Like okay, they're gonna be 116th best.
That
this
defensive
year.
Tackle who's a turnstile, he's back.
Like so, if you know. If
that the, safety who spent most of the time laying down on the turf, he's back.
So, like, if the coaching staff is good, it's a good thing. If the coaching staff is bad, then...
Who was the guy who had an interception in the Nevada game?
You think I forgot? Do you remember?
Javon White.
Javon White.
Dang it.
Good enough, though. You got the last name and phonetically pronounced his first name right, I guess. But yeah, Javon White. So, I don't know that it matters. Like, it doesn't
Could
matter.
Could we ask Ray Brewer?
If he yes, that is a good point. I will ask Ray Brewer that specific question if he remembers who had that interception.
Who was the guy? All right. Next brief. Got it.
Me llamo Guillermo.
The Broncos want to eliminate the onside kick.
They're stealing from the AAF, aren't they?
Yes, but also, you mean the NFL Broncos, right? Not the...
Yes, not Boise State.
Okay.
Yeah.
Our games are already on Facebook. We might as well.
The alternative to the onside kick is what the Raiders are proposing: is you get one offensive play from the 35-yard line, your own 35-yard line. If you get 15 yards, you got to get to midfield. You keep the ball. Like you're basically starting a drive on 4th and 15. If you don't get it, the defense or the other team gets the ball wherever you turn it over. The safety part of it, you know, kickoffs are dangerous and unnecessary. Sure, get rid of them. But the part that I like about it is the NFL last year, 4 of 52 onside kicks were actually recovered by the kicking team. Like, it was pointless to try an onside kick last year. Like, you just didn't get them. So I want to see more teams have a chance to keep the ball after scoring in the final 2 minutes to go down and tie or win the game. So I would be in favor of this because I feel like it'd be better than 4 of 52.
I mean... The one thing I'll say is that it also favors coaches not having to, like, actually manage the clock on defense.
Are you sure? I mean, you still do. It's the same as an onside kick, no?
No, I'm saying, like, if you need to make a comeback in the final 2 minutes, you need to be able to, like, have your defense. If your defense goes out there, you also need to be able to manage the clock. You can't be calling timeouts in, like, weird situations. Also, you need timeouts in the final 2 minutes.
Right, but this doesn't change that.
I mean, okay, get me my offense back on the field. All right, fine.
It just gives you better, like, that you're taking a individual play and you're saying, win this play and you get the ball back. Right now, it's, we're going to go kick the ball 10 yards and try to jump up in the air and catch it. It's very stupid. But this is like, yeah, we get to put offense out there against your defense.
I'm all for less kicker.
Yeah.
Like, I want the kicker deciding less of my game.
It's still a you take one individual play and you say, win this play, you get to keep the ball. It's just we're taking it and making it normal football as opposed to kick it into the ground, hope it bounces right, and maybe somebody screws up trying to catch it.
Lube the ball up. The NHL rules. Maple Leafs' Morgan Rielly did not direct a homophobic slur at official.
All right.
The only reason I'm making
somebody
this
did
is because Tyler, during the breaks, keeps going, I heard it!
There's video of him saying...
Something.
Yes, you hear the homophobic slur. I don't know who said it. Like, Morgan Rielly of the Maple Leafs was accused of saying it, and they're saying, no, Morgan Rielly did not say it. That's fine. I don't know that Morgan Rielly said it. I don't know what his voice sounds like, but you can hear the homophobic slur. Somebody said it. And, like, maybe it was a fan. I don't know. But, like, somebody said it, and it's just like, nobody said it. What do you mean nobody said it? We hear it. We hear it. It's right there. I don't get it. I don't understand.
I don't know. Like, there aren't a lot of words that sound like that word.
Yeah. I don't know. Somebody said it. I don't know who, but somebody absolutely said it. And the NHL is like, yeah, nope. No slurs here. Ray Brewer of the Las Vegas Sun is next. Got a lot of UNLV with him. Every day I give you a look inside Bischoff's briefs. Have you ever wondered why it is so smooth? It's because of Manscaped.com. Whenever Bischoff's briefs gets hairy, the Lawnmower 2.0 from Manscaped.com cleans it up. Their precision-engineered tools with skin-safe ceramic blades help avoid painful cuts inside Bischoff's briefs. So head to Manscaped.com and use code ESPN to get 20% off and free shipping. That is code ESPN at Manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
A very big sports story is happening.
Tyler Bischoff is...
If a very big sports story was happening, we'd know it.
We do know it. We just don't understand it.
You don't understand it.
Technically Correct.
Ray Brewer from the Las Vegas Sun joins us now. Ray, we've got a quick question for you. Who had two interceptions against Nevada to win the Fremont Cannon this year?
Well, first of all, let me correct you. It's against UNR, and how could we forget the legend, Javen White? Let's go, baby. Come on. Challenge me if I'm going to go on your show, all right?
Well, see, here's the thing. I have this thought process that there are no, like, big-name UNLV football players, and, like, guys will make plays, and they'll make plays in a big game like that, and then they're forgotten very quickly. So I like to quiz people in a game that just the most recent UNLV game, and I feel like most people wouldn't actually get that answer right.
Yeah, now, as you ask that, I'm thinking to myself, Sanchez's first year when they won in Reno, there was a kid who had a pick six, a random linebacker who, that was his one claim to fame, name a street after him type of moment, and I can't remember the kid's name.
Ryan McAleenan.
Yes. Well, that kid is a legend, so hopefully he's doing well in
life. A legend that nobody's name remembers because you make a big play and it's just forgotten. I don't know. I don't know what it is. All right. I want to do some UNLV basketball. So UNLV, 11 wins in the Mountain West, first time since 2011, but it is also probably the worst the Mountain West has ever been. So how do you evaluate this season?
Well, I mean, you could only beat the teams in front of you in your schedule, and I get what the skeptics say, Tyler, that, okay, UNLV swept five opponents. Those five opponents happen to be under them in the standings, and it's the worst the league's been. And all the teams ahead of UNLV, all the teams that have shown some signs of being a good, you know, basketball program, whether it be Fresno State or San Diego State or the team in the northern part of the state of Nevada, UNLV not only has they lost against, but they've been absolutely destroyed again. And so I do get the narrative, but hey, listen, they've got double-digit wins in the league. They've got a home bye going into the tournament. Year three from Menzies, if you believe in giving him the time to develop the program, which I clearly do, it's a feather in your cap. Not a great feather in your cap, but at least it is a feather in your cap.
What is, if we look at the Menzies tenure, what is sort of the year that you say he needs to make the NCAA tournament, or at least show, like, oh, he's on the bubble or something? Like, is there a year that he has to do that by for you?
I mean, I think next year is a pretty significant year for Coach because, you know, if you believe in the history of rebuilds nationally, year three for a program is kind of when they take that next step. And next year's year three for him, even though it's year four, it's kind of year three because that first year was kind of just a wash. So I think next year's like they've got to be knocking on the door. They've got to show great signs of progress. They've got to have some great moments. They've got to bring some people back to the arena. He needs to show that he's got this thing going because everybody in the program is not only his guy, but you know, guys that have been in his program for a while, and he wants to grow old with players, as he always says. So I think next year is basically his time to either show that he could get this thing going in the right direction, or you know, UNLV is going to have to go look for somebody else.
So what is it that you would sort of grade next year as a success or failure? Like, are you saying it's NCAA tournament or it's a failure, or is there a different bar that you're looking at for next year?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, and I hate to be that guy, but I think that, especially with college basketball not really being that strong right now, there's a few good teams at the top, and then there's a lot of mediocre teams, and the league is very winnable. It's easy to navigate through. I think they need to be a top three team in the Mountain West. I think they need to, you know, make it to the semis of the Mountain West tournament. I think they need to find a way to get into the tournament. Unfortunately, with the league being probably down again next year, it could be a one-bid league again. So, you know, he's going to have to win the league outright to make the tournament. And, of course, they haven't done that in, whatever, 16 years.
So we have the ultimatum on Tony Sanchez that it's bowl game or bust for Sanchez. Do you think we could see that for Marvin Menzies?
You know, I think that, you know, Desiree has said that she's going to evaluate Coach at the end of the season, and whatever comes of that, I don't know if she's at the part where she gives him an ultimatum. I think that you've got to remember, when he took the job, and I think so many people forget, he was like the eighth choice, and he was the one guy that raised his hand and said, listen, I'll take the job, I want this job, I want to be at UNLV, but it's going to take a while to get it done. And he went out and he tried to build a roster in that first, you know, late April, and he was able to get one four-star recruit in Baxter. Of course, that guy's not here anymore. And then he just filled it with players that nobody wanted, right? Or whether it was JoJo, who turned out to be a great player, your buddy Mike Romalo loves him, or like a Chris Clyborne. And, you know, Chris's first games as a sophomore, Tyler, I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, they're stuck with this kid for 3 years? This is awful. And he's turned out to be a really productive player, and that shows me that Menzies could develop some kids. And, you know, if UNLV wants to be this university that every 3 years fires a coach and then has to play two coaches for two more years after that, and they're never going to give somebody a chance to get established, then go ahead and do it. But in my opinion, not only does he get next year, I think he gets, you know, 2021 as well. I mean, this thing was, he had two players that he had left over, and all of a sudden, you know, now we look at, you know, one of my favorite sayings, the name on the front of the jersey, and if they're not, you know, making the tournament and going on a run every year, it's considered a disappointment. This thing was brutally bad when he inherited it.
How many of our athletes would you guess are just actors' kids?
I don't even get that question.
Wait, you haven't seen, so we haven't talked about it, but there's a scandal going on now that coaches at private universities around the country were claiming that kids were athletes and taking like hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars to say they were athletes so they could get into places like Yale and USC and Texas.
I mean,
come on,
UNLV is a great school academically. In fact, the law school just came out as being one of the top 30 nationally, but I don't think we've got any of that going on quite yet.
Okay, on UNLV basketball, because every time I go to a UNLV basketball game now, I get the sense from the fans that they're there as like a chore. They're like, they're there because they feel they have to be there and not because they want to be there or they want to have fun. And I'm curious, A, like, if you agree or completely disagree with that, but B, if you do agree with it, like, how does that change? Like, why is that the way it feels to go to UNLV games right now?
You know, I think there's a core group of UNLV supporters who, win, lose, or draw, they're gonna be there for the program. It's probably the same 6,000 people you see at Sam Boyd Stadium at the end of a football season that is going to end without a bowl game. They're people who just love UNLV. They're proud of being a UNLV supporter, and they're always going to be there. Then there's probably a few thousand people or 1,000 people that just like basketball, you know, tickets are affordable, and they want to go see a game. Is it a chore? Do you feel if you're one of those like 6,000 loyal UNLV fans that you're now obligated to show up and be part of it? I don't know. I mean, I guess I could see that. I mean, a chore for me would be like, okay, I'm my kid's soccer coach. I love coaching him. I love my kid. But sometimes I don't want to race home from work and go to practice. To me, that seems like a labor of love type of chore that you're describing for UNLV. And it may be that way for a few people, but I just don't think it's for like a vast majority of people. I think those loyal 6,000 fans that they have rain, snow, or shine are going to be the loyal 6,000 fans they have rain, snow, or shine.
All right, give us your best Noah Robotham story.
Oh, my God. So Noah Rabothan was a Catholic school legend, and a Catholic school is like, you know, a middle school basketball league, and he played for Our Lady of Las Vegas, and on that team was Jerry Tarkanian's grandson. And Our Lady would win the championship, and Noah was just an absolute god. His brother, Sar, was the point guard at Gorman, and everybody just looked up to Noah. And I remember I'm in the Gorman gym, his transition year, 8th grade to 9th grade, and the kid is just shooting and shooting and shooting, and everybody's feeding him the ball because all these kids look up to him. And I look over, and the kid's got a Duke shirt on, and I'm just like shaking my head. I'm like, I can't believe this kid is the legend that everybody's looking up to. He played with Tark's grandson. It's his best friend. Alex Tarkanian is like his best friend, and he's got a Duke shirt on. I'm like, what's going on with that kid? And then, you know, he makes varsity as a freshman, and his first big moment is they play Finley Prep at Cox Pavilion. 2,500 sold out. Tickets are going on eBay for an ungodly amount of money. This is the year after the Shabazz Muhammad-Anthony Bennett match, right? And he hits a shot from the corner to send it to double overtime. And since then, I've always called him Big Shot Noah. Super nice kid. Love his family. I'm glad that he made his way home to UNLV.
And didn't end up at Duke, right?
I know. Well, yeah, didn't end up at Duke. I don't know if he still has his shirt, though.
Well, he is Ray Brewer from the Las Vegas Sun. Ray, we appreciate your time.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
That's good. Of course, Ray's story of, hey, give me your Noah Rabothan story, is how he was wearing a Duke shirt when he was in 9th grade.
Check out the podcast on lvsportsnetwork.com. Tyler Bischoff is
technically correct. The best kind of correct.
Will Kane on First Take called Antonio Brown a suicide bomber today because
he's a moron?
Yeah, I don't know. Because his line was, I'm not looking for the most inflammatory comparison. It's just the only comparison I can think of. It's suicide bomber. So, Antonio Brown. Oh, he dyed his mustache back to...
Oh, that's too bad.
It's no longer blonde, unfortunately.
I know.
Is part of his hair still blue? I don't know. I did not get an update on that. He was wearing a hat.
Well, he need to... what if he dyes his mustache silver?
That's a good point. He should do it silver. Yeah. He should do the whole thing silver, right?
No.
Do you like just the mustache being weird?
Just the mustache silver and then one lock.
Being very creepy there. So, Antonio Brown's in as a Raider. We're waiting on Le'Veon Bell. The Jets and Ravens are supposedly the front runners. The Raiders are somewhere.
Oh, God.
In the picture. They're like Fresno State of this race right now.
But a distant third.
Le'Veon Bell followed Derek Carr on Twitter, according to The Athletic. So that's why you pay that subscription. So maybe Le'Veon Bell will be a Raider soon. Well, one update from the whole Trent Brown, Colton Miller, left tackle, right tackle thing. Vic Tafer of The Athletic, he did write yesterday that from everybody he's talked to, he believes Colton Miller's going to stay at left tackle and Trent Brown's going to play at right tackle. So they're going to be paying a right tackle, whatever, it's $16.5 million a year for the next 4 years. Well, I guess only the first two are guaranteed. That's the thing with Trent Brown. The first 2 years are fully guaranteed. Third and fourth year are not fully guaranteed. Trent Brown's going to be a Raider for 2 years is how that's going to work out. Trent Brown played right tackle with the 49ers, though. He's only played one season at left tackle. It was last year with the Patriots, and it was after an injury. So he has been a right tackle before. So that would make some sense, and it means, you know, that whole year of committing to Colton Miller playing left tackle and forcing him to play through injury wasn't for nothing. Like, it was, all right, let's see if this guy's any good at left tackle.
He wasn't.
He was hurt. I'll give him a break. I'll give him a little bit of a break.
We'll give him the Menzies. The first year doesn't count.
I think we are. It is a little bit of like, oh, who cares? Because they can just switch him if they need to. Like, if Colton Miller doesn't work, you just put Trent Brown over there. How much are you? Oh wait, no. I wanted to do this thing. Adam Schefter tweeted this out a couple days ago. Antonio Brown's new contract, big raise, more guaranteed money, no more years added to it, has NFL teams distraught and wide receivers excited. It is a big win for Julio Jones, AJ Green, Michael Thomas, Tyreek Hill, Amari Cooper, and a big loss for teams trying to rework those deals. I love the idea of NFL GMs seeing Antonio Brown getting traded to the Raiders and getting the new contract from the Raiders, and NFL GMs just cussing out John Gruden. Just being so pissed that they gave that Gruden gave Brown what he wanted. I don't know why.
Money?
But I love that idea. That they're just like, damn, now we have to give Julio Jones what he wants. Damn, now we have to give Amari Cooper what he wants. Like
I'm sorry. Like this whole time all I'm doing is trying to find a more offensive way to refer to Antonio Brown. He treated it like a Osama bin Laden.
I hope every move that John Gruden makes, other NFL GMs are pissed about. Like, they just, the whole time, they just sit there and they're pissed at him, or they think he's an idiot, whatever. Like, I just hope that every move he makes, they're like, damn, this guy again ruined stuff for us. We're not going to get Julio Jones at a discount, right? We're not going to get Julio Jones at a discount now. Now we're going to have to pay him what he's worth.
Darn it, Gruden!
I just enjoy that thought process.
Exercising free market capitalism by paying someone what they're worth.
Should have held out. Should have colluded against him. Didn't even work out for baseball. They couldn't even collude against Manny Machado and Bryce Harper.
Dallas Keuchel.
Yeah, he hasn't signed either.
Nope.
There's a lot of free agents who haven't signed in baseball. Like, the two big ones took forever, but there's still guys. It's like, the season starts tomorrow, right? There's good players that aren't out there. Oh, well. Don't be a suicide bomber.
I swear to God, I'm breaking your glasses.